Are you tired of undercharging, over-delivering, and overworking? Well, I have some good news for you. I put together a free course for women web designers who want to make more money without overworking. Just go to webdesigneracademy.com/free course or click on the link in the show notes of this episode to get instant access. And since you love podcasts, when you sign up, you'll have the option to get the entire free course instantly in a podcast feed so that you can listen on the go. So if it feels like you've been working 24/7, but not making as much as you want, go get that free course right now at webdesigneracademy.com/free course. Welcome to The Profitable Web Designer, a podcast for web designers who want to work less and make more money. I'm your host, Shannon Mattern, founder of the Web Designer Academy, where we've helped hundreds of web designers stop undercharging, overworking, and create profitable, sustainable web design businesses. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Profitable Web Designer podcast. And today I am excited to introduce you to my guest, Tim Netzel. He is a UX designer, web developer, and the founder of freelancegps.com, where he coaches on how to start and grow successful freelance businesses. And when I was preparing for this interview today, I noticed, Tim, that you said that you're Freelance GPS voice is part Leslie Knope and Roy Kent. And I'm like, this is my guy. I cannot wait to introduce him to everyone. So thank you so much for being here. Can you share a little bit more with our listeners about you and why you started Freelance GPS?
Absolutely. Shannon, thank you for having me. So I've been running Freelance GPS for about 3 years now. I've been a full-time freelance designer and developer for about 5. And I really started Freelance GPS just because freelancing has changed my life so fundamentally. I have worked in and around startups pretty much my entire career. And one of the things that I found is just that, like, the pace of business today, the amount that changes, really, I don't think is very well tailored to people's needs as people. And so for me, starting Freelance GPS was really about helping other folks achieve sort of the freedom and flexibility that I found through freelancing. You know, the ability to kind of set your own schedule, the ability to work from anywhere and on projects that interest you and get paid really well to do it. My wife and I spent a year as digital nomads traveling around the country. You know, I never could have done that prior to freelancing. And so having the ability to do those kinds of things has been huge. And I really kind of just want to pay it forward and help other people realize the same types of goals.
I love that so much. And I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. The freedom and flexibility that we get from really taking control of everything and being our own boss and running our own businesses is like nothing else. And I'm super curious about what you see with the people you coach and that your colleagues and maybe your own experience. For me, when I first started freelancing, I transitioned out of corporate and I kind of, in the beginning, recreated those corporate structures that I came from. And almost built a business that trapped me. I wouldn't say almost. I built a business that trapped me because of my beliefs and how I had to operate and a lot of things that I carried over into my business. And so I'm super curious what your opinion is on what it takes to actually create the freedom that freelancers can have when you're working for yourselves versus maybe just kind of repeating some of the things that we were trying to leave behind.
Yeah, no, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. That is one of the two major problems that I see new and even experienced freelancers having. The other one being, like, how do I find enough of the right clients? But just about every freelancer who's been doing it for, you know, more than a few months, I think is struggling with that problem of like, how do I actually realize this lifestyle that, you know, I was aspiring to when I started freelancing? And I think fundamentally, that is really about designing your business in a way that supports your life rather than the other way around. And I think a lot of that is done in the sales process with clients. One of the things that I do kind of right from the get-go is like in the statement of work that I sign with any individual client, there's a bunch of constraints. And some of those are very project-based, like, oh, there's only going to be this many iterations, you know, on a design or something like that. But every single one of my statements of work has a limit to the number of calls I'll do in, you know, during the project or in a given week or that kind of thing. And so I make sure to set some really clear boundaries. And that I think has made all the difference. For me, it means like, I'm a night owl. I'm not a morning person. So my mornings are really slow, you know, like I'm drinking coffee and reading a book at 10 a.m. and I just work later because that's how I want to do it. And so setting some of those boundaries, I think, is key. There's also, I think, some tactics that have been really, really helpful, right? In 2024, obviously, you're going to get email and you're going to get Slack messages and you're going to get whatever else at like all hours of the day or night, but that doesn't mean you have to respond. And so some of it's just like, okay, like I'm not going to respond, or if I am going to respond, I'm going to schedule my email to go out at a different time, right? Or I'll schedule my Slack message so that, you know, I don't get another response back right away. I think if there's anything I've learned about like email and Slack is that the better you are at it, the more you get. And so like, it's kind of, you know, one of those situations where you're like, you know, Atlas holding world up or that kind of thing, right? And so just making sure that you sort of give yourself the time and the space, right? Just because you finished with the project doesn't mean you need to let the client know that you finished with the project if you've got more time, right? Like any of those kinds of things can give you a little bit of breathing room as well.
I love that advice. And, you know, I think of like a lot of freelancers, if they were ever an employee before starting, you know, going off on their own, they were probably awesome at their job. They were probably like the go-getter, high achiever employees that were used to operating and like always being responsive, always making sure that the everything got done on time, like responsive in their communication. And while that's great and it really works in a corporate environment, I feel like if you carry those things over to your freelance business, it can quickly become overwhelming and impossible when you have more than just one client. Like your boss is your client at work, but you have multiple of those that you're handling when you're freelancing. And so that can get like super overwhelming quickly. So it's like, you have the agency to design your business the way you want. And just having that like realization that you get to call the shots is like, so I think it's mind blowing for a lot of people, at least the clients we work with and the people that we talk to on this podcast are like, wait, what? Like I can tell the client how this goes and not like, I don't have to let them tell me how it goes in order to like get them to say yes to me and get them to pay me. It's like a whole paradigm shift for them.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. When I'm coaching folks on this topic, one of the things that I make clear to them is like, you need to know what your own kind of internal order of priorities is, and you need to know what your own kind of internal ranking of your clients is, right? Because there's going to be situations where clients want a lot of stuff all at the same time, and you can't do everything. Or in order to do that, you're going to have to give up on something that's really important to you, right? Like spending time with family or pursuing, you know, a hobby or whatever else, right? And so you have to be able to make those decisions in real time, you know, with kind of a clear North Star. And I think when you have that, it becomes really easy to say like, all right, like this client is a nice to have client, but they're not a need to have client. And so, you know what, like if I'm a little bit late on something compared to what they wanted, like it's not the end of the world. And I think having that sort of clear kind of paradigm and decision-making framework is just really, really helpful because it sort of frees you up to act and live in the way that you actually want to.
Yeah. So I want to go get in your time machine and go back to how did you get your start in web development and then ultimately freelancing?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I've been building and designing websites for my entire career, but honestly, it's more like my whole life. I built my first website when I was 10 and I was like absolutely hooked. You know, it was on a Gateway 2000 computer in 1995. So now I'm definitely dating myself a little bit, but I was hooked ever since. And after college, I got a job for one of the big consulting firms. And though I didn't realize it at the time, I was actually doing user experience design. And that kind of really just inspired a love of like understanding how to create software that people really want to use, that's easy to use, that's helpful, that's elegant, that's beautiful. And, you know, have been working kind of in that realm ever since. After about 2 years, I started my own startup doing marketing for the craft beer industry. And we actually had the number one rated beer app on the App Store for about 3.5 years. Since then, I've been in a whole bunch of startups in and around Boston where I live. And then in 2019, I actually lost my job, which is pretty common in the startup world. I had been working on a new product at an existing startup. We're starting to see some traction. But one day the CEO pulled me into my office and basically told me he had decided he wasn't all that excited about that product and wanted to go back to working on the old thing. And I was just like, not thrilled, to say the least. But, you know, I found myself in this kind of job search that I didn't really want to be in because I had been pouring my like heart and soul into that product for over a year. And I just wasn't finding anything that I wanted to do. And I had sort of freelanced on the side for a little bit, but it had never been like, you know, a consideration as a full-time career. And at the time I said like, all right, like, why don't I just do this for a little while? Cause like, you know, I was getting a few job offers, but nothing I was excited about. And so I started doing it and, you know, in about 3 months, I kind of just fallen in love with it. It was such a different paradigm, like the ability to, like I said, set my own schedule, the ability to pick and choose my projects. And yeah, I've never looked back.
So how did you decide back then how much to charge? Because that is one of the biggest questions that I get on this podcast or in anything that we do is like, how do I figure out what to price my services at? So how did you do it? And like, what is your best advice for our listeners?
Yeah. So, and Shannon, please feel free to interrupt me because I could nerd out on this question like all day long. But, you know, fundamentally, there's three ways to price anything, right? There's what's called cost plus pricing, which is what like the Starbucks and McDonald's of the world do. You know, if you're selling a cup of coffee, how much do the beans cost? How much does the paper cup cost? How much does the labor to create that cup of coffee cost? And you add up all of that, that's your costs. And then you add something on top of that, right? Some margin that's usually based on like perception of the brand. The problem with that in a sort of freelancing paradigm is that the perception of your brand is like totally unknown. People don't know what to make of that. Your costs are known to you at least, right? Like you can figure out how much you have to make to pay rent or your mortgage and save for retirement and buy food and all of that kind of stuff. But the other piece is kind of nebulous. The second way to price things is what's called market-based pricing, right? Where you look at what everybody in the market is charging and you say, all right, I think we're somewhere in the middle here or whatever, right? That is the most common way to price anything. But again, it's pretty arbitrary, right? Like if you look at Upwork, you'll find designers willing to work for $5 an hour in many places around the world. And then if you look at like New York design agencies, right, you'll find really high-end agencies charging $2,000 an hour. right? So just taking the middle obviously doesn't work there, right? If you try to go charge $1,000 an hour, you're probably going to get laughed out of a lot of rooms. And then, you know, so that's problematic too, right? And the last way to sort of charge is what's called value-based billing. And it's often used by really high-end consulting firms where they literally calculate, all right, this project is saving you exactly this much money, or it's making you exactly this much money. We're going to take a percentage of that. And for freelancers, that's challenging for two reasons. Number one, like, you just don't have the manpower to do that calculation in a really detailed way and track everything you need to track it. And number two, there's so much that's beyond your control that, like, you could lose out on a bunch of upside, right? Like, if you're charging that way and a client decides, you know, we're actually not going to pursue this project, then you wouldn't make anything. And so what I actually recommend doing is triangulating between those three approaches, right? And basically what you do is say, all right, I know what my costs are. So, like, that's the absolute bottom I'm willing to earn, right? I have to at least be paying myself on, like, an effective hourly basis enough to survive. I know what the top of the market is. And so, like, I'm not going to suggest any price over that at a bare minimum, but I'm going to use the value that I'm driving for my clients to try to move myself further along that spectrum towards the sort of top tier, right? And the way you do that, right, is by quantifying kind of what the upside is for the client. So, you know, if you're designing a new e-commerce site for an existing e-commerce client, right, and their conversion rate right now is 1%, if you think you could drive that to 2%, right, or there's even a chance of that, right, you know, right there, right, you're like doubling their revenue on an ongoing basis. And so starting to do that calculation and illustrate, like, here's what's in it for them can help move you from, okay, like, I'm just going to take, like, what every other freelancer is charging, $75 an hour, $150 an hour, whatever it is, and start to, like, make a business case that you're an investment, not just a cost, and push you kind of along that spectrum towards the top end. So that's the approach that I take. It's the approach that I recommend for folks. It's much more of a, like, consultative sale type of approach. So, you know, you have to be willing to have those conversations and ask your clients questions, but that's how I do it.
I love that so much. I'm totally in alignment with that strategy, that as that we position ourselves as collaborative consultants that are here to help our clients create the results that they want, and that those results are valuable and all of those things. So I love that so much. And the biggest obstacle I feel like our listeners have when wanting to shift from, mostly they're doing like a market-based approach where they're like, well, here's what I see other people charging. I couldn't possibly charge more than that, or whatever that is there's this piece of like, well, I can't promise that I'll double their revenue. Like, I can't control, like, these pieces. So what is your thought on people saying, like, here are all the pieces, and based on my experience, this is what I think you can reasonably expect, and them really wanting to shy away from, like, not even wanting to say that because they're worried that they, like, can't deliver?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, right, anytime a business invests in any initiative, right, they're making a bet. You know, they're saying, we think that hiring this person or buying this piece of equipment or redesigning this website or whatever is going to result in, you know, more revenue or fewer expenses or whatever it is. And so I think, right, starting to quantify that for the client is actually in and of itself just having a conversation, a service, because a lot of them don't do it, at least not in any kind of level of detail. But I think the bigger thing is you also start to get on the same page with your client about what you would expect is reasonable. And you start to then have a conversation with them about what are they really trying to achieve and how important is it to them? What's really the upside? And are you the right person to help them do that? right? And I think that's really ultimately kind of the secret to unlocking higher rates, is demonstrating to them that you have the expertise, not to just to like implement, right? Not just to like design a pretty website or write functional code or whatever it is, but that you have the expertise to make it more likely that that project is going to succeed. And if you can make that business case, right, the difference between charging $10,000 for a project and $20,000 for a project, when the goal of that project is to make millions, is like pretty immaterial, right? And they'd rather go with the person who's going to make it more likely that the project will succeed.
I love that. So good. So when you first started freelancing, how did you get clients? The other question that everybody's like, I want to go off on my own, but how do I find the right clients? How did you approach that?
Yeah. So I tried everything under the sun the first couple of months. And, you know, you name it. Like, if you've read about it, I tried it, right? Like freelancing sites like Upwork, blogging, social media. And what I kind of concluded ultimately is that you have to evaluate any sort of marketing approach based on two things, right? Number one, how crowded is that marketing channel, right? Anybody can join Upwork, which means everybody does, which means, you know, really like a race to the bottom effectively, right? Like there's people on there willing to work for $5 an hour because the average project gets 50 plus proposals, right? And that means your close rate goes way down. So like that's one thing that you kind of have to evaluate any marketing approach on. The other one is just how much time, money, and effort does it take to use that marketing channel, both on upfront and on an ongoing basis, right? Creating good social media content, creating good blog content takes a ton of time, particularly if you don't have an existing audience. You know, it's going to take you 6, 9, 12 months to like really get going and get clients using one of those approaches, which for most freelancers is kind of like a non-starter, right? I know when I started freelancing, I was saving for my wedding. I was saving for a down payment for a house. So it was like, I have to figure something out really quickly. And so what I found is that the kind of approach that has the best mix of those two things, right, is inherently sort of uncrowded. You get a lot of your client's time and attention and takes very little time, money, and effort to use. It's really just one-on-one conversations. And for me, that looked like two things, right? Number one, figuring out where are my ideal clients hanging out, both online and in the real world, and going and kind of participating there. And also figuring out who already knows your ideal clients and can introduce you. Oftentimes, that's other freelancers, particularly those in sort of complementary spaces, right? So if you're a designer, web developer freelancers, marketing freelancers should be your best friends, right? They are already working with the types of clients you want to work with. They don't compete with you. And they tend to be the first people that your clients are going to ask when they're looking for someone like you. In fact, like even this week, I've had 3 different clients ask me if I can recommend somebody in another field. And, you know, so partnering up with those folks and really just building relationships is a huge, like just a hugely efficient way to meet clients who want to buy and need the types of work that you do.
I just want to say, I hope everybody listening to this podcast heard that and heard it again, because every single person who comes on the show who is running a successful web design business, when I ask them that question, that is their answer, is relationships, reaching out to people, adding value to other people, just going that way. No one ever says Instagram or all of the other strategies. So I'm going to count up how many times on this podcast that has been the recommendation for how to get clients, because that's what we teach too. And we're like, hey, you know a lot of people who know a lot of people who know a lot of people. And if you just introduce yourself and let them know what you're doing and who you're looking to work with and add value to, and you reciprocate, marketing is so easy and it takes no time at all to find your way to some of those clients. So I'm going to have to add it up and be like, yes, Tim is in the build relationships to get your best clients camp when it comes to marketing. It's so good.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that approach, both for the reason that you just outlined, but also because I found it is just substantially more natural, both for myself and for pretty much everyone I've coached, right? I don't know anybody who feels like amazing about spamming people or, you know, constantly shouting everything that's great about themselves to, you know, from the rooftops, right? But it's super easy to ask for advice and ask for feedback and just like let people know what you're up to. Those are things that, you know, we as humans have been doing for hundreds of thousands of years, right? And just having those conversations, I think, comes very naturally, even to people like me who are introverted, right? Like having a one-on-one conversation is easy. And I think like the nice thing about this approach too is that you never have to pitch anyone until they kind of raise their hand and say, hey, I actually need what you have to sell. Otherwise, you're just saying like, hey, here's what I'm up to. I'd love for some advice. If they happen to need what you're offering, right, they'll raise their hand and say, hey, actually, like, I'm glad that you reached out. You know, we're actually looking for someone like you. And then you start pitching. And the nice thing about that is like, no one has a problem being pitched to when they're actually trying to buy the thing that's being sold, right? Like, that's not a big deal. And I think it takes just a lot of the pressure out of sales away because you're treating people the way you would want to be treated. You're treating people the way they would want to be treated.
Yeah. And you have something of value to add to them or to people they know. And if you truly believe that marketing isn't about you, it's about your clients and it's about making sure that they don't have to race to the bottom on Upwork and that they can work with someone that's really going to get past the project and understand what their goals are and what they really want and ensure that every dollar that they're spending is the best bet on the best bet they can make on creating their results. Like, why wouldn't you go out and meet people and learn about them and see how you can add value or say, hey, your project's really interesting. If you ever want to talk to someone about it, I'd be happy to. Like around here, we call that like building your own table. So it's like if you, you know, people are always like, well, where do I find my ideal clients? Where are they hanging out? Is there this room that they're all just sitting in, hanging around out around this table, and I need to just go find that room? And they're searching and searching and searching. It's like you can build your own table and invite people to sit at your own table by building relationships, creating environments where you can introduce the people that you've met to each other and just being that connector and adding that value. And especially for people who are introverted and don't want to be like pointing at things on reels or making TikToks or whatever everybody else is doing, like pass, no thank you. I just think that making friends is fun and then you all get to like help each other. So just like you reached out to me to be on this podcast, I'm always like, yes, like I see that we have something in common. We serve a similar audience. Like it's a win-win. Why would I not do that? And we don't know each other, you know, until today. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, the reality is that most people just like enjoy hanging out with other people who do similar things, right? And so just going into those places, building those relationships, and just kind of like talking shop with people does wonders.
Yeah. So I was looking at the typical questions that I ask people on this podcast, and one of them that jumped out at me that I wanted to ask you is, what's a pivotal moment that you can remember on your journey so far? Like, what's one of those things that happened that was just like, I'm going in this direction now?
Yeah. I think there's probably a couple of them. The one that really jumps to mind is when I was kind of searching for a full-time job, getting an offer and, you know, sitting down and kind of like talking about it with my wife and just realizing like, I'm not excited about this at all. And I think just making the bet of like, all right, like I'm confident enough in myself and my abilities that I'm not going to take this just because it's safe. And, you know, I'm going to bet on myself. I'm going to invest in myself. That I think was a really pivotal moment for me and was just huge because nothing else, you know, that I've been able to do since then would have happened if I hadn't made that decision. So that's the one that I think really stands out.
Yeah. I was just thinking back to that moment for me and coming home and telling my husband, like, hey, I put my notice in. I'm taking this side hustle thing full time and just being nervous myself to take the leap and leave behind the quote unquote security of the nice paycheck and the benefits and all of that stuff. And just recently, it's been 6 years since I left. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I don't want to say delusional because I don't think that that's the right word, but like what I thought was security was the opposite of freedom. And I just remember because we both grew up like go to school, go to college, get good grades, get a good job, make sure you can save for retirement, pay your mortgage, like all the things that we're taught to do that like successful, stable, steady people do. And here I am wanting to walk away. And I was concerned because I had told him all along, like, this is happening. I'm trying to like prepare him for me walking away from the golden handcuffs, so to speak. And his reaction was like, I expected him to be like, what are you doing? Can you take it back? And he was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go for it. And so I just felt, I was just curious, like, what was your wife's reaction to, you know, I have these two paths in front of me, like the job or betting on myself? Like, was she all in on that too?
Yeah, she was absolutely all in. I think I've had the lucky, a lucky situation as well and getting the same kind of support.
Yeah.
And I found that like frequently throughout the last 5 or so years, like there have been situations where I'm like, I'm not sure if I want to take this risk or not. And she's always been like, if you're excited about it, like just do it. Like we're going to be fine, right? We have savings. We, you know, my job's stable, all of that kind of stuff. And yeah, I can't sing the praises enough of having a spouse who's really supportive. Yeah. Get yourself a good spouse. If you're listening to this podcast, it's just huge.
Truly, because there are a lot of ups and downs in terms of building a business and going through challenging times. And I'm a coach, you're a coach, we coach other people. So I'm assuming you think people should have mentors.
Absolutely.
As they navigate that, but also having like your personal network of support to help you through that is huge. And yeah, it, like without the support of my husband, just the emotional support and the like, and the really, Shannon, you've been doing this for how long? Like it's going to work out. Every challenge you go through, you get through. So I'll just remind you of that again and again. And yeah, so it's just, yeah, that's so awesome that you have that same experience with your wife. So how did it come about that you decided to start Freelance GPS? At what point in your freelancing journey were you like, whoa, there's really a need for this?
Yeah, honestly, it started when I had a few friends and friends of friends coming to me for advice. And I realized, and I hadn't really thought about it prior to that, that I had a ton of know-how and how to make this kind of thing happen, right? How to build a successful freelance business. And I think it was around the same time as I started to kind of like talk to some other people who were trying to do the same thing that I realized how much I loved it. And those two kinds of things kind of made it really obvious. I started kind of coaching a few people, and it was very kind of haphazard and whatever else. And I was like, all right, like, I'll put together some content, right? Like, I'll try to systematize some of this stuff. And really, just one thing led to another. And, you know, I started building freelance GPS as a side hustle. And, you know, it still is. Like, freelancing is still my main focus. But it's been a ton of fun.
Yeah, I think it is so... Well, one, it's like all of the mistakes you inevitably make along the way, and I say you as in me also, that it's really rewarding to be like, oh, I made this mistake. Here's what I learned from it. Here's how I changed it. That worked really well. And I'm not going to just use that information to help myself for the next time. I can actually have a lot of impact and help a lot of other people create the freedom and the agency and the fulfillment and the autonomy that I've been able to create as having gone through the mishaps and the mistakes and the wins and the good things. And it is, I feel like, as much fun as it is to solve like a difficult tech problem and like come out on the other side of that, like to help someone book a client at a higher price than they've ever had possible, or even like maybe walk away from a bad client relationship that they need to walk away from, is just infinitely more rewarding somehow. I don't know.
Absolutely. I mean, I think ultimately, right, like everything we do is all about people.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me at least, like having coached people and had them come back and been like, you know, this is how you changed my life. Like,
yes.
I wouldn't trade that for anything. It's just such an amazing feeling. And if you're, I'd say for anyone who's thinking about getting into coaching, absolutely do it. It's such a great way to give back. It's so rewarding. Yeah, absolutely love it.
And I also kind of think to tie it back to what we were talking about earlier with when we're talking about like our clients and how we help them make decisions that are going to pay off for them in the future. I think investing in coaching with the right mentor is like one of the best investments that you can make in your business, because you're just going to, the opportunity cost of messing up and fixing it yourself. I mean, you can absolutely figure it out that way. Everybody listening to this is very smart, but also you can't see what you can't see all the time. And other people just want to, like other people like Tim, just want to like help you shortcut it and help you avoid that and help you like achieve the potential that maybe you don't even see in yourself. So I just feel like everybody should have a coach.
Yeah.
Not just because I'm a coach.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I spent $20,000 on coaching last year, mm-hmm. and it was worth every penny and then some. I actually feel like I got a really good deal compared to the amount of value it's created for me. I'd say be, you know, circumspect about who you choose and make sure that they're kind of the right fit for you. But it has just moved my career forward so much on so many levels, and even just my life forward. So yeah, I would agree. Everybody should have a coach.
Yeah. And I just think it's important to just be like, okay, this person not necessarily has done what I'm doing, like the exact same thing, but this person really understands where I want to go and cares about it and can help me get there. So I think that that's, I don't know. I totally agree with you. My investments in coaching have been my, I don't know, life-changing as well. So I just have a couple more questions for you before we wrap up. What is one piece of advice that you would give to someone who is just starting out on their freelance journey?
Yeah, I'd say more than anything, just keep experimenting. I'm a huge fan of the lean startup methodology, so much so that like it's an approach I take in my personal life too. And I think just the ability to treat your business like it's an experiment and think through anytime there's something that feels risky or daunting, right? Like, how do I test this and how do I test it quickly? Rather than, you know, spending months or years planning before pulling the trigger, right? It's way better to fail fast because you learn something from each experiment that doesn't work out, and you adjust your hypothesis, and then you just keep doing it. And so that's, I think, my biggest piece of advice is treat your business like an experiment. Don't be afraid to try something and have it work out. That's the only way we learn. And the faster you do that, the quicker you'll get where you want to be.
Oh, that is such good advice. I was just reflecting on my 2023 for a podcast episode, and I was just realizing, like, oh, I spent a lot of time avoiding making difficult decisions in 2023. And what you just said just kind of jumped out at me, because I'm like, oh yeah, I was trying to avoid what I thought would have been failure. But instead, by delaying and not acting fast, I made it worse. And so I appreciate that advice, because I'm like, yeah, you do just want to, like, make, you know, what is my theory of what could happen? Hypothesis, make a decision, get the data, move forward, instead of, like, staying stuck in the what ifs or the planning or the preparing or the researching. I'm not a plan, prepare, research, but I'm definitely like a what if, what if, what if. Yeah. It's like, okay, we'll just try something and find out.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly, like, I think I'm naturally predisposed to do the same thing. And so, like, this has helped me so much, just like the realization that there's no way to guarantee success, but there is one way to guarantee failure, and that's by never doing anything. And so if you
get
paralyzed,
that's the quote for this episode.
Yeah. If you get paralyzed by indecision, that guarantees failure. So you just do something, just take that next step and see what happens.
So good. Okay. One more question. What is one belief about yourself that you had to change to get to where you are today?
I love that question. And I think for me, the big one is that I think for the longest time, never believed I would be good at sales or marketing. I mentioned earlier, I'm naturally an introvert. So, like, talking to large groups of people doesn't necessarily come naturally to me. Going out and kind of singing my own praises doesn't necessarily come naturally to me. But I think what happened over the past 5 years is I realized that's not the only approach to sales and marketing. And the approach of having one-on-one conversations, of building relationships, of taking an interest in people and their problems and just genuinely trying to help them works just as well, if not better. And means that, like, I personally have a whole bunch of skills to bring to the table that help me sell more and serve my clients better.
So good. I think a lot of people have a belief that they're not good at sales and marketing, and you get to make sales and marketing work with your unique superpowers and what you love, and you don't have to be somebody else that you're not to get clients. I just, like, it makes me think about my early days where I'm like taking a picture in like a corporate jacket, like in this pose, and just being like, and then saying things like "we" on my website when I'm like, it's just me. And you can just be you, and you will get more clients that way for sure. So tell us more about Freelance GPS, where we can connect with you and find all of the cool things that you're up to and learn more about your coaching.
Yeah, so the best place to go is just freelancegps.com. I've got a free course that, you know, really goes through in a lot of detail some of the fundamentals that we've talked about today, right? Like pricing, where and how to find clients, how to have those conversations and start building those relationships, all of that kind of stuff. You know, I also do one-on-one coaching. I've got a paid course as well. So there's a lot of opportunities to engage. And one thing I'll say is for anyone who's listening, I do free hour-long strategy sessions. So if you just want to chat with someone who's done it before, whether you're just thinking of starting, or you've got, you know, you've been a freelancer for a while and you've got a specific challenge you're struggling with, you know, would love to chat with you. That's just kind of my way of paying it forward, because I've had the benefit of getting a lot of help from other folks along the way too.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here. I'll link all of that up in the show notes. So definitely go connect with Tim. He's got some really cool resources on his website, freelancegps.com. Thank you for everything that you shared. It was super, super valuable. And it's been so great to meet you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Shannon. Great to meet you as well.
This podcast is part of the Sound Advice FM network. Sound Advice FM. Women's voices amplified.